You're listening to the Play Like a Girl podcast, episode number 27.
You play ball like a girl!
I'm Nikki B with Play Like a Girl, made just for female athletes.
I can be a girl in a man's game, a diamond in the dirt.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Play Like a Girl podcast. I'm your host, Nikki B. Here at Play Like a Girl, we aim to encourage more confidence in young women who play sports and give them the necessary tools and advice to have an amazing career in sports and beyond. If you are a young woman who plays sports and lives an active lifestyle, or you know one of these young women, I am so excited you are here. Each week, we'll either bring you a guest in the sports world or have a roundtable discussion of the many taboo and important topics in the world of female sports. Are you with me? Let's change the game. All right, Plag listeners, today's guest has one of the most unbelievable stories I have ever heard. Kendall Burton is a former SEC softball player who went through countless surgeries and traumatic medical experiences that would have convinced any other person to give up. Her journey took her from playing for University of Texas at San Antonio to Oklahoma State, where she wasn't clear to play, then finally to Georgia, where she finally completed her collegiate career. She is as resilient, strong, and brave as they get, so please give a warm Plag welcome to Kendall. Hello, Kendall. I am so excited to talk to you. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my goodness. Well, I love how our paths have crossed. It's so cool when you told us that you had been listening to the Play Like a Girl podcast and it popped up in your recommendations on iTunes. And when we talked to Jen, she was like, you guys got to interview this girl. And we read a little bit about you and we were like, yep, we need to have this girl on here. Your story is so amazing and powerful and inspiring. So today's just going to be awesome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
So cool. Okay. So something we do with our guests, as I'm sure you know, is do some rapid fire questions. So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. The first one is, where do you currently live?
So I currently live in Athens, Georgia.
Mm. And then where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburban area of Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas. Cool. And then what sports did you play growing up?
What sports did I play? I played all of them pretty much. I mean, basketball, soccer. I danced for a second and I hated every second of it. I played, but my biggest ones were volleyball, track, and softball.
Mm, cool.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I feel like all of our guests lately are just athletes that play every single sport. And I'm like, I did golf. But it's fine. I played a little bit of soccer and basketball, but let's be honest, I was not good. So good thing I stuck to golf. Okay. Next question. What is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote, probably it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, like that quote, just because I feel like it really expresses my life. And oh, I 100%. Talk about it a lot during my speeches when I do talk about my story, because I just really resonate with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. Okay, next question. What is one of your superpowers?
What is my superpower? I actually thought a lot about this because I'm obviously listening to your podcast. And I don't know. I mean, I'm really friendly. I honestly, genuinely just always can make it. I can talk to anybody. And so I'd like to say that's my superpower for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I think personally your willpower and resiliency is your superpowers. I mean, we'll talk more about this and get into it, but I don't know anyone that would be as resilient and, you know, have that strength that you have. So yeah, I can't wait to talk about it further, but I think that's definitely your superpower. Okay, final rapid fire question. Who is your favorite athlete?
Okay, well, I don't want to be biased and be like someone on the Georgia Bulldogs team. So I'm actually going to say my friend Riley Bayless. She actually plays at Oklahoma State, and it's just because I love watching her play. She just she loves and respects the game so much, and it's, and not that you can't tell that everyone loves the game when you're watching softball, but it's just so evident when you're watching Riley play. Like, she just is so into it, and it's just nothing else matters in the whole world. So it's just awesome to watch her play.
That's really cool. And it's funny you bring that up, because I feel like you softball girls, there is something about you guys, and it's funny that we've talked to a few of you now, and we actually talked to one of the guys who is a coach here at Max Reps. He's a coach for a local softball team. And it really, I feel like softball is a cult in a way, but it's all of you are so in love with the sport and so emotionally invested. And we actually brought on a couple softball girls and had a roundtable discussion. And she brought up a good point. Like, you guys play for the love of the game. It's not about the money. Like, you play for with heart. And that just totally resonated with me. So I was like, I love all these softball girls because it's so true. You guys play with heart. And I think that it shines through within all of you. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it's super honest, like what the girl said during that podcast. So
yes, love that. Okay, so Kendall, tell us, who is Kendall Burton?
Okay. Okay, I don't even know how to start this question. So I guess I'll just like start with my story. I was born with a birth defect called, it was a cleft lip and palate, and it was a pretty severe one. And so I had about 23 surgeries by the time I was 17.
Wow.
And when I was 18, my very first semester of college at UTSA, I survived an acute ischemic stroke, which left me having to withdraw from my classes. And I mean, I couldn't speak or text or write or just like have all my cognitive skills were pretty messed up. I mean, I couldn't just like have a basic conversation with someone. But I came back from that and I participated in the spring season at UTSA. And then I played the next season, so my sophomore year, but there was just something like uneasy in me, and I was just like, this isn't working anymore. There's like, this is not where my path is. So I said bye to UTSA, and it led me to Oklahoma State University, which was super short-lived because I was only there for one fall semester because they never medically cleared me. And I mean, I had like countless doctors tell me like, you'll never play college softball again. You'll never be an athlete again. Like, and then I had a bunch of universities like basically tell me no, like just looking at their your records, like you can't play for us. But then that led me to University of Georgia, because I had them in Oregon were the only, out of all the universities, they were the only ones that were looking at me and like cleared me medically. Like I was all good to go. But I chose Georgia, obviously. And then I got to Georgia and I was just like super excited, but I also was just like kind of traumatized. I mean, I remember like the first couple of days I was there, I like cried every day, which is like, and I felt like I hadn't cried in forever. But it was just like such a big transition. Like I just moved to another state, like again, personally, like 6 months prior. But, and then that was, I mean, I started the very first game at Georgia, my junior year when I got there. So I was there for like 4 or 5 weeks, started the game, but then I was just kind of like on and off in the lineup. And I had like my biggest post-stroke seizure ever that season as well. So since my stroke, I have these like post-stroke seizures, which are like super normal. Like every stroke patient deals with them. But basically I wasn't on medication or anything for them yet. And it was in the middle of the game at the Marietta Classic. So like everyone was there. I mean, like all the teams. And I was like, I spent the night in the hospital, like in California. And then I like basically just thought that I was never going to play again because I didn't think that would clear me. And so I had this moment of like, oh, I did everything I could, but I like, I'm like, it's all right. Like you did your best. Like you fought really hard, but then I ended up being totally fine. He just like gave me meds. Like it was like no problem. and then I, you know, the next following year was my senior year and I just like, I mean, I worked my ass off and I got the starting spot and ended up being in the World Series with like Crew 22. That was like the team last year. And it was just like super incredible.
Oh my gosh. That is absolutely amazing. I just can't even believe all the things that you have been through, that your body has been through. It's just, I mean, when me and producer Michelle were, you know, reading the ESPN Woman's article about you, we were like, how is this girl like still here? And how is she still fighting? You know, like, how did you get up and fight every single time after you were knocked down at time and time again? It's just so crazy. So I mean, what do you think it is that made you so resilient through all of these, you know, like all these medical traumatic experience? Like what kind of pushed you and pulled you through all of them?
I mean, honestly, I was just so like go, go, go. And my main goal was always to play softball because when I was a kid, like when I found softball when I was 8, I mean, I was going through like major insecurities because, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't look like everyone else, you know, mm-hmm. like I was having surgeries on my face like twice a year. Mm-hmm. And so I really found softball to be this just like uplifting, like it was kind of a shield, like, you know, in The Incredibles, like the one who does the bubble.
Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
Like I felt like that was softball to me. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I just like put my bubble up and I like played and it was just like, I felt beautiful. I felt really confident. Mm. I felt like I could like bench like three gorillas. You know, I was just like in this like, I mean, basically my sights were always set to keep playing because I love being a part of something bigger than myself. I loved just competing. I'm like a very competitive person, like stubborn and competitive human being. So, and it was just kind of like, if I could just take it day by day to be able to feel that way again, it was just like, I always had this hope. I always had something that was so much bigger than what I was going through, if that makes sense. Like, that's what drove me to get up every day and like do everything and more to just like keep going.
Oh, that is so powerful. And it's funny because one of the things I was going to ask you is like, what is it about softball that, you know, made you want to keep fighting and like, you know, get through everything you were going through. And I think it's so cool that you said it really was like kind of your outlet and it was your escape and you felt beautiful doing it. And I think that's just the coolest thing ever. What is it about softball that you love so much though? Like what really draws you to it? I know you said it's because it was kind of your outlet when you were 8 years old, but what is it about the sport or the community that you love so much about softball?
Well, I guess it has to do with something that you mentioned earlier. It's kind of just the love that's within the game, and it's the love that you get with your teammates and your coaches. I mean, you have new teammates every year, right? You have coaches, especially when you're a kid, you're like always bouncing from team to team. But what remains the same is the rules of the game and the fact that you're banding together with other people. Like that never changes regardless of who you're going quote unquote to war with, right? And so I just like softball is just such a beautiful sport. Like I just can't say it enough. It's just like something, it's like so much, it's just really special. Like, cause it is true. Like girls don't play for the money. Girls play because it fuels them in a way that money can't, if that makes sense. So
yeah, it's so true. I love that. It's so cool. So let's talk about we'll talk about all about your medical journey, but the first and foremost thing is when you're born and your cleft lip and palate. So what was that like going through? Because as a young girl, I'm sure as girls we already have so many insecurities, but as a young girl, you feeling like maybe you looked different or were different from everyone else. What was that like for you, and what were things that you kind of had to tell yourself or shift your mindset about to really like get through that?
I feel like at a young age, in middle school was when I started to really feel kind of really different. Because when I was in elementary school, like I thought it was like the coolest thing that I was different. Like I thought it was like the coolest thing that I had all these scars and like I had all these surgeries done. And then like you get older and you're like, okay, I still have braces and I'm like missing a tooth and all my friends are like really pretty and I'm like going through this like super weird stage. And it's just like, that's when I was kind of like, whoa, you don't feel good about yourself, right? And I think it was kind of like looking myself in the mirror and just being like, this is okay. Like you're still awesome and you're great. And like, this is it. This is what you look like. And you need to embrace that. Like you have no problem like telling people like about your birth defect, like why you have a scar. So you should kind of exude that with your face, not just when you're talking about it. So I think it was kind of like a learning process for sure. And I mean, I still struggle with it, you know, today. And it's just because it's just natural. I mean, I'm human. I'm never just gonna like always feel perfect and feel like this is just the best thing ever, like when I was five, right? But I think it's like always a work in process, but just like being able to like look yourself in the mirror and be like, I really love what I see.
Right. Oh, that is so powerful because, and I think I like the part that you brought up when you were younger, you thought it was the coolest thing ever, because I think when we're young, when we're kids, we don't really see differences, right? Like we don't, And we're not self-conscious. I don't think that really happens until like middle school, high school, because that's when we start really realizing what the societal norms are. So I think it's so interesting that you had that experience, and that's, you know, as you got older, you started feeling that way. And it's really what society tells us, which is just, it's all false, right? And I think too, do you attribute some of it to gratitude? Because I know, like, for me personally, whenever I'm like, oh, you know, I got the short end of the stick, I have to think like, you know what? I'm alive and I'm breathing. Like, I couldn't be here tomorrow. So you kind of have to be grateful no matter what. Do you think that in like practicing gratitude or anything like that kind of helped you get through it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, and then the thing is, I was always healthy. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like battling cancer or like fighting for my life, right? Mm-hmm. And that was something I constantly always reminded myself, like, this is like when I got like in the like lowest of the low, like it was like just reminding myself, like, Kendall, like, this sucks, but like, this is not even close to like what, you know, someone else is battling. And that's not to fast forward or anything, but with my stroke, like, I remember sitting in the hospital bed when my doctor, my neurologist, told me, like, you're physically capable. You could literally run a marathon tomorrow if, like, you really wanted to. But, like, you know, your brain is injured. It's going to be really tired. And, like, you can't speak. You can't write. You can't read. You can't have a conversation. Like, I don't know what that looks like for you. And I remember being, like, if I am physically able to do this, and there's so many people who have had strokes in the past who – are in a wheelchair forever. They can never eat by themselves again, shower by themselves again. Like, this is nothing. This is nothing, like, compared to the other people who just they truly don't ever get the chance again. Like, I got the chance. I got a second chance. And so I persisted so hard because there's so many people who just don't they don't have a shot to fight again, if that makes sense. So gratitude is certainly like a huge portion of my life, and just like something that I'd like to say defines me a little bit.
Yeah, I love that. And I can totally tell. And let's jump into your stroke, because you mentioned that you had, what is it, 23 surgeries before you were 17. I mean, I can't even imagine going through that many surgeries. It's absolutely insane. And then when you got your stroke, like, talk about that experience and how scary it was for you, and really how, because it was more of a mental injury that you had to overcome. And you said you really had to relearn all the basics, right? Of just communicating and everything. So kind of talk to us about that.
So when it first happened, I remember like it was okay. So I was in my dorm room when it happened, and I don't remember feeling scared until my dad was actually down the road at a hotel. My grandfather had actually passed away, and it was the day of his funeral I had my stroke. So it was like a really trying time for my family. But I remember, like, I was kind of going through this, like, I thought I was hallucinating. Like, I couldn't really figure out why my arm wouldn't just, like, raise. And I attempted to call my dad, and he, like, wouldn't answer the phone. And that was the first time I really got scared, because I was really, really tired, and I wanted to fall asleep, but I didn't think I would wake up if I did. And so it was just, like, I remember that was, like, the most fearful part of it. Because I was just like, I was all alone, right? I was just like on the floor in my dorm room, just like laying there. But I mean, once I got to the hospital, found out it was a stroke, I was physically okay. You know, eventually, like, things would come back. I would be able to speak again. Like, I knew that was going to be in my future, right? I just didn't know, like, when, how. And I feel like I didn't even process the emotions of the fact that I had a stroke. I was just like going. Like, I refused to go home to Houston. I stayed in San Antonio. And my poor mom, like, was just like, because I just wanted to, like, live a normal life. That's all I wanted to do when I was a kid. I didn't want to worry about my surgeries and stuff. So, like, when I had my stroke, I was just like, okay, so what's going to get me to be normal again as soon as possible, right? And my mom, like, stayed in a hotel room for, like, a month while I, like, went back to my dorm room and, like, attempted to just, like, be normal. I mean, I went to practice. I went to wakes. And I would have people have to drive me because I couldn't drive for a while. I'll go to my speech pathologist and cognitive therapy, and I was doing, like, first grade homework. I'm, like, not even kidding. And, like, I had, like, dyslexia all of a sudden, and then, like, my memory was shot. Like, I couldn't – if I had, like, a 20-minute conversation with you, I couldn't remember like the basis of like if you told me about your dog, I'd be able to tell someone like they told me a story about a dog, but I couldn't tell you anything that happened in the story. Does that make sense? So it was just kind of like a constant like trying to retrain my brain how to like remember things, and it like words were always jumbled. It was kind of like a game of charades with my friends like all the time. It was like it was like super funny, and like my coach and I, we made this term called stroke-ish, which like sounds really inappropriate, but it was like every time I butchered a word, I would just be able to be like, oh, that was stroke-ish, sorry guys. And like it was just funny, like, and it was just like I really wanted to take it in like a really humorous way, and I really felt like super empowered, and I never felt like this like stroke was totally hindering my life until about like a year after, like after season was done and like the therapy was done, I just kind of realized that like I like wasn't the same Kendall, and I was just, I just like felt like I was in this huge rut. So this is like my sophomore year, like the fall, and I just felt like I felt like uncomfortable because I just didn't feel like myself anymore. And I actually went into therapy like within there because I was just so like I needed to talk to someone, and like nobody could like offer anything. I mean, no, like what 18-year-old can understand having a stroke? Any of my friends, right? And like even my coach, like they didn't know. So I went to therapy, and it was just kind of like she just kind of taught me and like showed me, you know, when you go through really traumatic things in your life, like you're never going to be the same, and that's okay. Like you need to embrace this new Kendall. Like, you know, you went through this process of just trying to get through it and get better, and then you did it, and now you're not accepting that. Like, school is still really hard for you. You probably shouldn't be in school. I had my neurologist literally tell me like you really shouldn't be in school, but I was doing it anyway just because I just wanted to play. I wanted to have this like college life that I was supposed to have, right? And then that's kind of how it transferred over for me wanting to leave UTSA, just because I didn't feel like I was fighting so hard. And I love, I mean, those people at UTSA, they got me through a horrible time. And I'm still really good friends with all of those girls and the coaches. But there is just something there that just like, there was just no grind. There was no fight anymore. Like, and I just wanted something more out of softball because I was working so hard just to be on the field. And so I was like, I need to leave this portion of my life behind because this isn't going to get me to where I'm gonna feel really good, like in my gut, you know? So.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's really crazy. And I think it's crazy because, like I said, it's just your resilience, right? I mean, I can't imagine anyone else who has a stroke that's like, nope, I'm still like gonna do, I'm still gonna be a normal college kid. I'm still gonna live in the dorm. I'm still gonna do the, you know, do all the things that a normal college kid does. And like you said, your mom, I think it's so cool that your parents were supportive of you doing that and just, you know, letting you do your thing, because I think you had to just figure it out. But it's just so cool how resilient you were and how, you know, stubborn in a way you were, and just, you're like, nope, I'm gonna live this normal college life and you can't tell me otherwise. So I think that's really, really, really cool.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Was there ever, I mean, you talked about your therapy. For other athletes who are maybe not necessarily going through a stroke, but maybe going through some sort of identity crisis or some sort of traumatic event, like what advice would you give to them? Because I know you said you went to therapy. What advice would you give to anyone that's going through a tough time like you did?
I just find it's kind of like you need to identify like how you're feeling first and foremost. I feel like that's like a big thing, because it's like no one can help you, even a therapist really, until you can help you, until you identify like what's really going on in my core. Like, why am I feeling this way? And I mean, therapy, like I was a whole different human being. And I was like always just like this like fighter. Like I think like out of all my friends, like no one ever thought like Kendall's going to therapy. Not that that's a bad thing, but mm-hmm. it was just like they just like saw me as this just like huge human shield that like mm-hmm. never needed anyone to help her, right? Mm. But it just changed who I was as a person because like I said, it helped me grow because I was holding on to things that just weren't me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what a lot of people go through in college in general, regardless of your, it doesn't matter. You don't have to have a stroke. You don't have to, you can just go to college and be like, who am I? What am I doing? Why mm-hmm. is this happening? Right. So I think that therapy, I think that just asking for help, just having mm-hmm. someone just sitting there and just saying, hey, I need to talk and I want you to just listen to me for like however long. Mm-hmm. I think that can just totally change your life, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. That's really powerful. And it's cool too that you mentioned that, you know, your friends never thought that you would have gone to therapy. And I think it shows, I mean, vulnerability is a strength, right? I think being vulnerable is not a weakness. It's definitely a strength. And that's something we've talked about on this podcast before. But let's talk. So you went from UTSA and then you went off to Oklahoma State. And then talk about how you only had one semester there, I think you said. Yeah. And so those seizures that you had, I mean, were they scary? I mean, what was kind of like the reasoning why you went from Oklahoma State and then off to Georgia?
So, well, like I said, so I went to Oklahoma State and I was like ready to be a cowgirl, right? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to play for them. Like I love mm-hmm. the coach. I was bonding with the girls, but the university doctor actually, he never cleared me and he made mm-hmm. me go through all these tests. He never consulted with my neurologist in San Antonio, who had literally cleared me to play mm-hmm. for two seasons, never even called him. Like, and I even talked to him myself and like, hey, if someone calls you, like, can you please? And he was like, yeah, totally. No worries. Like, I got you. And I mean, for about a month and a half before the first, they told me twice that they weren't going to clear me. So mm-hmm. the first time I like went to practice at like 5 a.m, like all conditioning, weights, I just watched. I went to practice and I just watched. And I went to every team event and I just watched. And then I had like a neurologist and a cardiologist in Oklahoma tell me like, you're never going to play softball again. Even though like all of my scans were fine, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I had dead brain cells, but I mean, so does everyone else's brain when they have a stroke. So, but after that, it was kind of like, okay, fine. I don't really, like, at least I have an answer. And so then mm-hmm. I started contacting like all these other schools because I was like, I did not go through everything I've already mm-hmm. gone through not to play, right? Like, there's like, I'm not just going to be like, see you later. But then I had like 8 universities just be like, we want you on our roster, but like, our mm-hmm. trainers are not cool with this at all. Mm-hmm. And that's like, I had a week where I was just like, maybe I should just hang up my cleats. Like, maybe there's just like, you know, you chose a decision to leave UTSA. Like, you can't beat yourself up. Like, you did try and you tried to mm-hmm. better yourself. But it's like, what, you know, what are you going to do? But then Oklahoma State came. So my parents wrote this, like, very intricate letter to, like, basically all of Oklahoma State. And so they decided, which was awesome because my parents were like, we're not going down without a fight. Even though I was just like, let it be, like, I'm over this university. Mm-hmm. Like, love the coaches, love the girls, but just like, get me out of Stillwater. That's mm-hmm. kind of how I was feeling. But then they came back and were like, we're going to get you clear. Don't you worry. And so then I was like, I started going back to practice and weights, and I went to the games and I just like sat there and watched mm-hmm. and everyone's cheerleader. And then they just told me again, they're like, sorry, just kidding. Not going to happen. And I was just like, is this a joke? Like, it was just like, what is going on? But then, like, a couple of days later, it's like Oregon called me and like, hey, you're clear to go. We saw all your scans. Like, wow. Come to an official visit. And then it was like, and then Georgia. And I was like, is this like, this is like, what? Like, because I honestly, this is really sad to say, but I never thought I was good enough to play at those universities. Like,
wow.
I sold myself short when I was younger, you know, mm-hmm. and some of my surgeries had like put me back in the recruiting process, mm-hmm. which was fine, but I was cool with playing at a, mm-hmm. like a smaller school because I just wanted to play, right? That doesn't mm-hmm. didn't matter to me if I played Oregon or, you know, UTSA. I just wanted mm-hmm. to play. But then I ended up with those two universities, which were like the best, mm-hmm. some of the best college softball programs out there. And you know, they say when you know, you know. And Georgia, it was like the second I stepped foot on the field, I was like, I'm in. I mean, I didn't even leave like my visit, and I told them like on the field, I was like, I'm in. Like, I hadn't even left. mm-hmm. for my playing or anything. So
that's amazing. How cool is that? And I mean, Georgia is such an awesome school. And how was your experience at Georgia? And talk about kind of your experience at Georgia and then leading out to graduating and where you are now.
Okay. Georgia leaves me speechless, to be honest with you, just because, and I know that's like basic to say, but I mean, I got to play with two girls at Georgia who actually I played with since I was like eight. Like they were, Sydney Emanuel and Courtney Emanuel, they were playing at Georgia when I transferred. And I played in high school with them, middle school, elementary school. So that in itself was super special because our parents, like, I mean, we're like family. Like I consider, they're like kind of like at this point, they're just my cousins, you know, like they're just, like we're just very close. And so that in general, and Sydney's a year older than me, but getting to finish my career with Courtney is just like, it's still surreal for me to think about. It's just so, it's just incredible. And like the people I met there, I mean, I had an instant family, and it's really hard to just, first of all, it's hard to transfer, but then to come in like in a season, I mean, I came in the spring, like we are in season when you get there. And it was just like, you know, it was really hard for me at first, but it was just like, I had that big post-stroke seizure, and it was just like, I felt like I had a whole nother family. Just like when I had my stroke, it was like, I'd only been in school for like about 2 months when I had my stroke. And I mean, you don't get that like form of family like every day. Like you just don't. And so, I mean, getting there was awesome that spring, 2017, that spring. But then 2018, like that, my fourth year in college, like with Crew 22, I mentioned that earlier. It was just Team 22 for Georgia. But we just built this culture together, and we're just like, we're going to be relentless. We're going to fight. We're going to band together. We're going to laugh through everything. I mean, and we were thrown like so many curveballs. Like our ace pitcher, Brittany Gray, she tore her bicep. Like, I mean, like literally tore her bicep in the middle of the season. And we still ended up going to the World Series. And it was just because that, like, we just had so much faith in everybody. And we just like, we never pointed the finger. Like these girls were just like, I mean, it was like family, like times a thousand, you know. It's just like, it was just like, no matter what, we were going to get the job done. And that's exactly what we did. And it was just like, whenever I think about them, I just like, I get chills, and then I want to cry, and then I want to like laugh. Like it's just like all these emotions, right? Every single time I like think of them. And just being able to like have gone through everything I went through and then be a part of a team like that, that's like, honestly, like I'm all over the place when I'm talking about it. It's just unexplainable, right? And like being able to go to the World Series with a team like that, that you just like love more than anything, and being able to take your cleats off, like at Oklahoma City, like in the College World Series, like after everything I've been through, like I remember like the moment when I got to Oklahoma City and just being like, why are you nervous? Like, why are you more excited? Like, Kendall, what's wrong with you? Like, I remember having these feelings. And, you know, a week or so after season is done and, you know, my career is ended, right? I just kind of had this realization. I was like talking to my dad, and I talked to like my boyfriend, my friends about it. And it's just kind of like my phrase that I was saying, my very favorite, like, it's all about your journey. It's not about the destination. Like, that was my dream. I mean, who doesn't want for the World Series? But it was, like, everything that it took for me to get there, everyone's path that I crossed, like, every up and down. I mean, that was why it was special to be there. Like, that's why it felt just content. That's why I just felt happy to be there. I just, like, this is the coolest thing ever, and there's nothing to be nervous about because you went through all this stuff, and look what you did. You did it. Yeah. You know?
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is so cool. I love that. And the one thing I think is really special too is, of course, like you said, the team. And it's just so cool that you guys had, you know, a group of girls that, like you said, it's just unexplainable. Like it just, it all worked and it was so effortless. But what are some of the qualities that you think it takes? Like what advice would you give to young female athletes who are playing softball or even any other sport, what advice would you give to them for kind of trying to build that team, that like unexplainable team that just works so effortlessly and perfectly together?
Honestly, okay, so Coach Tony Baldwin, he was our assistant coach, and his like everything he said like every day was like, be the best you. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is like one of the most powerful things, because I feel like teams get in trouble because they have people trying to fill roles that aren't theirs. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. It's just that everyone has their different strengths. Everybody mm-hmm. has like this like everyone has their thing, their mm-hmm. story. And I feel like teams, when people try and like fight for the leadership role or fight for this and fight for that, and then you're clashing instead mm-hmm. of just like, you know, this person does this really well. We should like, we're gonna groove with that. Mm-hmm. But this person does this really well. We're gonna like take that into account. And it's kind of like taking everybody's pieces of the puzzle and putting mm-hmm. them in, like making your puzzle. Because the thing is, like, everyone's edges are different. You can make them, like, you just have to find the right fit. So mm-hmm. I think that when it comes to leadership and being a teammate, and it's just learn to be the best you to fit the puzzle of that team, because every team's different. You have a team come in and then you lose people, and then all of a sudden you have another team. Mm-hmm. So I think that that would be my best advice.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And it's so, so true, because I think it's so hard for everyone to be good at every single little thing. But if you can take, like you said, the strengths of every single player, that's what truly makes a team go from good to great. So yeah. I think that was awesome advice. Well, Kendall, what is next for you? So you went to World Series. What are you doing now? What's going on in the world of Kendall?
So I'm still in Athens because I had to take mm-hmm. a fifth year because, you know, I transferred like 1,000 times. So I graduated in May. And
exciting.
So, yeah, it's really exciting. It's like, it's going to be awesome. I'm excited mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. But so I work for the package deal, and I got employed by them like last June. Mm-hmm. And that in itself has been just like so rewarding, because mm-hmm. I mean, the founders, Jen, Amanda, and Morgan are just, I couldn't even tell you better role models. You just can't find it. Like they'll do anything. I mean, I'm basically here talking to you because of Jen, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, and the article that you read, like the ESPN article, that was kind of all happened because of Amanda. She threw my mm-hmm. name out there. She took my story and she, you know, she found out, and then she asked me all these questions, and then all of a sudden, like Wayne out of like, you know, 8 other stories chose mm-hmm. mine. So it's just like, it's just having people like that in your corner. I love being a part of their team, and I love the, I guess like all of our teammates, like all the mm-hmm. roster girls, they like support me and lift me up in like ways that I thought that I would never get after not playing a sport mm-hmm. anymore, which mm-hmm. is cool. I actually ended up getting a book agent because of the article.
Wow.
Because I told the writer, Wayne, that I mm-hmm. wanted to write a book. I remember specifically, I was, like, in the hospital bed after I had my stroke, and I, like, couldn't talk. Like, everything I said was just, like, so wrong. It was just, like, ah, whatever. And I remember thinking, like, I need to write, like, about this.
Wow.
And then that, like, that basically just festered and just, like, grew mm-hmm. and grew. And I was just, like, no, I want to write, like, a memoir. And then all of a sudden, I have this book agent like reaching out to me, being like, "Hey, I read your article. I think you're super awesome. Like, let's work together." And
wow.
And you know, that was something I was like, "Are you sure? Like me?" You know, I was like so like blown away. But no, Liz Parker is my book agent with the Verve Agency, and so I'm gonna write a book.
Oh my gosh, that is so exciting! Congratulations.
Thank
that
you.
That is so cool. Oh my gosh. And I can't believe it's so cool, because you, I feel like, basically manifested that to happen. When you said you're in the hospital bed after your stroke, you said, I'm going to write a book. And it's just so cool how, you know, you put it out in the universe. And I feel like you just continue to work. You continue to be resilient and work hard and everything. And it just, the universe provides back. And I just think that is just the coolest story ever. I love that. That's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah.
So
and then,
cool.
And then I also, like, I have this new dream to be a motivational speaker. And so I've had a couple of engagements. I actually just finished my website, like, no joke, this morning. Wow. So I'm having, like, some people look over it, make sure there's no typos, because, like, mm-hmm. I have typos all the time because, you know, I had a stroke. whatever. And so that was really cool. I mean, and I'm just, I just want to impact lives. I just want to share my story, because it's like, and I used to not want to, because I always felt like my story is nothing compared to other people's. Like, you know, people have it so much harder. But I mean, if my story can impact one person, then, you know, my job, my one job that day was done. And so I feel like that's basically just what I'm going to go with and just kind of get my name out there and do whatever I can. So that's what I'm doing currently. So. Oh,
that is so cool. Well, first of all, congratulations and good luck with graduating. That is so exciting. Your book deal, amazing. I think that is so, so cool. And for you being a motivational speaker, I can't honestly think of anyone better. I think, you know, your story is so powerful, and, you know, it's crazy that you even questioned yourself, is my story, you know, even that great? But I think everyone has a story, and it's just a matter of, if you impact one life on this earth, you have done your job. And I think you have already impacted many lives. And I just can't wait to see how many more lives you impact. I just, you're a beacon of light, and it's just very inspirational and very powerful. So thank you. Yes. Thank you for sharing your story and everything. It's just really, really cool. Well, a couple last questions for you. What is something that you would tell your younger self?
What I would tell my younger self? Don't take it too seriously. I always felt like, because I was lacking, like, you know, and like being like not pretty enough or something, I always had to excel really hard on other things, because like, I felt like in my head you had to be at this like top line, you know. And then, but since I could never get to the top line in one aspect, I had to like exceed expectations on others. But I just think like being super hard on yourself is really awesome, and it can be really powerful, but you always have to like tell yourself good things too, because you are doing something great. Like, you working that hard in general is just something to be proud of. So definitely don't take things too seriously would kind of be my, I wish I could tell my 10-year-old self that now.
Yeah, and I think you definitely have lived through that motto with everything you've been through. I can tell through the stories that you've shared. You have, you know, even like made light of getting, you know, having a stroke and everything like that. And I think just keeping that positive, lighthearted attitude and getting humor in there, I think it really just helps, because I mean, for me, it's like, what kind of life do we live if it's so serious all the time? You know, we only have one life to live. We might as well make it fun. So that's really great advice. Well, Kendall, where can everyone find you? I know you just said you launched your website. This will be coming out in, I think, a couple weeks. So if you want to share your website, we'd love to hear it.
Okay. Well, it's thetoughestout.com. That's kind of what I'm branding myself as, because that was kind of like the name of the article for ESPN. So definitely go check it out. Should be up and running and looking good by the time this is posted. And then for Instagram, I'm Kenny Grace with an I. So does that make sense? Ken I Grace. And Twitter is Kendall G. Burton, I think. And then Facebook is Kendall Grace Burton. So definitely contact me on all social media. I will respond.
Amazing. Okay, Kendall. Well, last question for you. Okay. What does playing like a girl mean to you?
Testing your limits and setting limits. And then once you get there, finding new limits to set. So just like the constant, relentless, like pushing yourself even harder than you think you can once you get somewhere.
I love that. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Kendall, for coming on the podcast today. I'm so excited for your future. It's a bright road ahead for you, and I can't wait to see what you do with it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was super awesome. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Kendall, like I said, is as resilient and strong and brave as they come. Her story just even awed me more after I talked to her, and it was just so cool to hear everything that she went through and how she still has come out on top and all the amazing things that she has in store for her future. So please make sure to share this episode with a friend who you think will enjoy this podcast. I'd love to hear your feedback and thoughts on this episode, so head to iTunes to leave a review. You can also send any questions or topics you'd like us to cover by sending us a DM on Instagram at @playlikeagirlmp. We want to know what you want to hear. Before you go, screenshot this episode and tag us at PlayLikeAGirlMP so we know you're listening alongside us. Thank you so much for listening to episode 27 of Play Like a Girl. We hope you come back for more. Once again, I'm Nikki B, and remember to never stop playing like a girl.
You play ball like a girl!
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.